You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to a new episode and a new week here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Tuesday, September 3rd, it's the first episode we've had in a week. That's because, well, I've been on vacation, just got back from Toronto last night, went up and watched the Astros for a couple of games last weekend, went to Niagara Falls as well, had a lot of fun, and if you're in NBA media like myself, this is the appropriate time of the year to go on vacation because, just like the players, once the season begins in late September, it's going to be a grind. So this is the time that usually the NBA gets unplugged, both from a media perspective, the players, the coaches. Now, there are a few out in China with the Team USA in the World Cup. There are no Rockets anymore now that PJ Tucker withdrew with a minor ankle injury a couple of weeks back. But other than those players and the media members covering them, it's typically the quiet period of the year. Everybody's spending time with their friends, their families before the season begins and everything gets back to the daily grind at the end of this month once training camps open. And in the case of the Rockets, preseason begins on September 30th. They have the opener of the entire 2019 NBA preseason because with the Rockets going to Hawaii and then Japan during the preseason, they need time to acclimate, not just for the plane flights, but also to get their bodies used to the massive change in time zones, those types of things. So before you know it, we'll be back into daily mode back here at Locked On Rockets, and I look forward to it. This is the time of year where things get a little bit slower. Of course, as luck would have it, on my vacation, the Rockets were an exception to the usual rule, and that news did break about this basketball team, even in this so-called quiet period. And, of course, it's the contract extension of guard Eric Gordon. We've talked about that for a couple of months now, really longer than that, because this has been the key question. Once the Rockets made the trade for Russell Westbrook, and we know that as far as the core, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Clint Capella, Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, we know what they're going to roll with, at least to start this season. The big question, the next, I would say, near to intermediate term, was what's going to happen with Gordon, because with him being a year from free agency, or he was before this extension, at least 3 years, $54.5 billion beginning after this coming season, could be 4 years, $76 million if he hits his incentive. We'll talk more about that in just a few moments. But the point is, for at least four more seasons, Eric Gordon is under contract to stay in Houston now. It was a big question because after Russell Westbrook and James Harden, who each are under contract for at least three more seasons, Gordon was the next guy that was really uncertain. Clint Capella is under contract for four more years as well. So in terms of that core, that was the one guy that was not locked up long term. And yet, because the Rockets have so much money tied up in the likes of Westbrook, Harden, and Capella, if Gordon were to leave, the Rockets wouldn't really have an avenue to replace him at anywhere near his salary. So that's why one way or another, the Rockets needed to answer this question. Certainly this offseason was the time to negotiate for an extension. And then at some point by the February trade deadline, Daryl Morey was going to have to figure out if they wanted to proceed into next summer and roll the dice, or if maybe they needed to consider moving Gordon to get something rather than risk losing him for nothing in free agency. Well, fortunately, that's not something that Daryl has to concern himself with anymore, because with Gordon signing the extension, he is in Houston certainly for this season. After signing the extension, he can't be traded for 6 months. That goes beyond the February trade deadline, so it effectively locks in that Eric Gordon will be a member of the Rockets for this coming season, and it keeps him under contract with the team through at least three more years after this season, four if you count this year, and perhaps five if he hits the incentive. So in today's show here at Locked On Rockets, it's going to be all about this bombshell with Eric Gordon that broke Friday night late on my vacation. Of course, that's how it happens. I know it's not all about me, but just not ideal timing, but you make the most of it. And we had a lot of coverage at Rockets Wire this weekend. That's the USA Today hub that I'm now editor of, breaking down what it means. And then today, I'm going to try and go a little bit deeper on the implications, the ripple effects of this deal. And in our usual three-segment format, it actually makes a lot of sense to divide this in three because there's three pretty clear angles to this as I see it. First, there's what it means for Eric and the Rockets players. Then there's what it tells us about Rockets management, specifically owner Tillman Fertitta from a financial investment perspective. And then there's GM Daryl Morey and what it tells us from a strategic roster management and building perspective. So we'll get into all of those over the next 20 or 30 minutes as we make our way through the program. But as far as initial thoughts, I'm happy that Eric Gordon's sticking around. He's a good player, 30 years old. He's certainly not over the hill. In three seasons in Houston, he's won Sixth Man of the Year. He's averaged about 16 points per game, shoots about 36% from behind the arc. And whether he's off the bench, as mentioned, he was the Sixth Man of the Year a couple of years ago, or whether he starts, which he did for the lion's share of this past season, including in the playoffs, it doesn't really seem to matter. He doesn't have much of an ego. He just wants to win. So when you have a guy that can contribute at his level, yet also does not have an overinflated view of himself and his role in the ecosystem, so to speak, of building a contender, to have a guy that not just can space the floor and play good defense. We saw what he did in the playoffs against the likes of Donovan Mitchell and Klay Thompson. We know that he's fairly clutch. He's made a lot of big shots late in games. I think back to the three he made to send the Lakers game, the ABC primetime one to overtime, which the Rockets ultimately won this year. We saw the game winner he had in Philadelphia a year ago at the buzzer. And then, of course, the way that really for two seasons now, he has stepped it up in the playoffs, not just with his percentages. Now, he did shoot 40% from three this year in the playoffs, but beyond just the fact that he makes more shots, the fact that he's more aggressive, we see how physical he can be with Donovan Mitchell. He's a guy, Eric, who at 30 years old, he has to pick his spots over the 82-game grind, but he does have another gear that he can get to in the playoffs. We see it defensively when he really bodies up guys like Donovan Mitchell, and then we see it on really the other side of the ball. Think back to those two Warriors series. One of the more defining Eric Gordon moments to me, that 2018 Western Conference Finals. Sure, he hit the dagger three that won Game 5 effectively for the Rockets, put them up 3-2, a game away and really a hamstring away from the title. But in Game 7, even though the Rockets, we all know the story, the three-point shot deserted them, the 0-for-27 stretch, etc., the Rockets still did not go away. Eric Gordon put his head down. He attacked the rim. He may not be capable of doing that over the 82-game grind, but he has that extra gear that he can tap into in the playoffs. He's consistently done it. He fits in well alongside James Harden. That's another angle to this, the continuity. This will be his fourth year playing alongside James. I think that trust is a big deal. Overall, I just think he's a really perfect role player for this team who accepts whether he starts, whether he comes off the bench. There's been talk this year that maybe Daniel House starts at the three, which would mean that Eric goes back to the bench. He doesn't seem to mind. He wants to win. So in many ways, you look at his three-point shooting, you look at his defense, you look at mentally how he seems to play well in the best moments. He doesn't have an ego, and it's a guy that you want to stick around, especially because he's only 30 years old. That is really young in the grand scheme. I know it feels like he's been around a while because he got an early start in his career, but he should have at least 3 or 4 prime years left, especially because you're not asking him to really step up his usage, particularly now that you have James Harden and Russell Westbrook around. And when you look at his percentages, he's actually a little more valuable than even the data would suggest. Now, 36% from three, which he shot a year ago, and that's roughly what he shot over 3 years in Houston. That's pretty good, but it's not elite. However, what makes Gordon special, even if the percentages aren't necessarily jumping off the page, it's the extreme volume, shooting nearly 9 three-point attempts per game. That's why, in my opinion, the percentage is a little bit lower than what he actually would do in most NBA systems. I think on a lot of teams, he would shoot nearly 40% from three. However, in Houston, because the volume is so high, it skews his numbers down a little bit. But when it comes to the Rockets, James Harden, now Russell Westbrook, even if Gordon is making just 36% instead of, say, 38 or 39, he's respected so much as a shooter, not just because he can make them, but also his willingness to keep firing. He'll do it all the way out to 27, 28 feet. There's a certain gravitational pull component to that that has value, even if he's, say, in the mid to maybe slightly upper 30s rather than like some of the truly elite three-point marksmen around 40 or slightly above. Even if the volume skews his percentages down a little bit, just the fact that he's willing to take that many shots, it means a lot to this Rockets team. That's why, really, you've seen James Harden bond with him a lot. We saw the two of them not just working out in Los Angeles, the unofficial team-wide workouts in August, but we also saw the two of them, EG and Harden in particular, working out together in the Bahamas. There's a tight bond there, and in so many ways, defensively, versatility, three-point shooting, and even though he doesn't do it a ton, the ability to create his own shot off the dribble, to drive, the fact that he's got that lower body very strong that can create some separation and bang on both sides of the floor when the Rockets need him to. He's a really good player. He's a good guy. He loves Houston. He said August 30th a year ago that he wanted to retire in Houston when somebody asked him on Twitter. And fittingly, August 30th, literally 1 year later, is when news of the extension leaked, first reported by Jonathan Fagan, longtime Rockets beat writer with the Houston Chronicle. And as far as the numbers, 4 years, $76 million, that's the max that the Rockets could conceivably offer Gordon. Now, it only becomes 4 years, $76 million, and it's the max because of his prior deal. The Rockets could have given him more if he got into free agency next summer, but I don't think that Daryl Morey wanted to go down that road because of the risk of, once Gordon is an unrestricted free agent and he's talking to other teams, who knows what can happen? And from a planning perspective, that's really difficult. We'll talk about that more in a few minutes when we get towards the Daryl Morey portion of today's podcast. As far as what it means for Eric Gordon and why I think the Rockets did this 4 year, $76 million deal potentially. Now, I say potentially because really it's 3 years, $55 billion after this coming season, the last year of his existing contract, which was 4 years, $54 million. He'll be making about $14 million a year. So about $19 million annually for up to 4 years. That's the max that he could be extended based on his prior deal. So I think it's a pretty good deal for Eric. He was maxed out, so to speak, and that the Rockets, even though it's not his max as a player, were he to be on the free agent market, it's the maximum that the Rockets could conceivably offer him. Now, it's a 3 year, $55 million deal unless Gordon either becomes an all-star or the Rockets win a title. I don't think Gordon is going to become an all-star. Aside from his personal limitations as a player, the reality is that unless there's a major injury to one of the other guards on his team, you have two guards ahead of you in Russell Westbrook and James Harden. Well, Gordon may not even be starting. And as far as the all-star team, you've only got four, at the most five guards out of your 12 in the Western Conference. Well, you've got two ahead of you on your own team that are all-stars every year, James Harden and Russell Westbrook. You've also got guys like Stephen Curry, Damian Lillard, Devin Booker. So it's tough to see a route. Klay Thompson, when he comes back, he's been an all-star numerous times. So it's tough to see Gordon becoming an all-star. I love the guy, but that seems unlikely, barring, I don't know, maybe a terrible injury, and knock on wood, let's hope that doesn't happen to the likes of Westbrook or Harden. And maybe if Gordon starts and gets really hot from three, you never say never, but I think it's really unlikely. And as I said, Westbrook and Harden, that shouldn't happen because their track record, knock on wood, is that they've been very durable. The Rockets winning a championship, that's the goal. That could happen. And so if that does, well, it makes Gordon's deal 4 years, $76 million. It adds an extra year at about $21 million guaranteed. But I think Tillman Fertitta and the Rockets would be happy to deal with that consequence, so to speak. If they win the title, well, that's why you're doing all of this. That's why you're spending the money on Eric Gordon. So as far as the finances, it's the max deal available. And the reason I think it makes sense for both sides, I explained why I think this clearly works for the Rockets. He's a very good player. I know when you hear a number at nearly $20 million a year for a player that's somewhere between your third and fifth best, clearly Harden and Westbrook are one and two in terms of the most valuable players on your roster. Then three through five, Clint Capella, Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, you could order those. Really, you could make an argument for any of the three. But I'm sure some of you will look at a player in that range. You already have a lot of money long-term tied up in Capella. And I'm sure some will have some sticker shock at paying that much. Well, number one, that's the modern NBA economics. That's just the way players get paid these days. Everything has risen exponentially the last few years. So some of it, I think, just seeing those raw numbers, it's not what we're conditioned to seeing maybe even 5 years ago or so. So I do think for the Rockets, it's not an overpay. And the other reason is that with the Rockets being over the cap, having all that money tied up in Westbrook, Harden, and Capella, there's nothing the Rockets could do to really replace Gordon if he left. It's not like, well, if you don't give this money to Gordon, then you'd have all of a sudden this amount of cap room that you could go and replace him and get someone on the open market. That's not how it works. Now, maybe you could argue that, well, if you get more breathing room relative to how much luxury tax you're paying or your luxury tax line, then maybe you're more likely to spend like a mid-level exception. But folks, you're talking about a very small portion of the $20 million or close to it annually that Eric Gordon will be receiving. For the Rockets, you weren't going to be able to replace Gordon on the open market. It was either you keep him or you lose him, and you really don't have any additional avenues to retain him. So that's why, even though they had to go to the max for an extension to get this done, I think it makes sense for them. And I also think it makes sense from a timing perspective, because the Rockets, even though theoretically they could offer more money next summer, they did not want to wait around, because the downside risk of losing Gordon for no compensation would have been significant. They needed an answer, and if Gordon was not going to extend, I do think they would have had to at least consider this offseason or at the trade deadline using Gordon as an asset in a trade, because his salary, he's one of the only mid-tier salaries you have. Also, his value to you in terms of the fact that he's a very good basketball player, there's no way the Rockets could let him go and not get anything in return. So that's why I think the Rockets, this made sense for them, even though the number is a little bit high. And as far as for Eric, I think that's also where it ties into why it's a good deal for him. I know you can look at this and say, well, Eric would have been a free agent next summer, and there's supposed to be a very weak class overall of free agents. Obviously, this year, Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, this was loaded. 2021, it could be as well. 2020, unless Anthony Davis is open to leaving the Lakers, there's not a whole lot of guys that are truly supposed to be on the market next summer. So because of that, there's speculation that Gordon, even though he'll be 31 years old then, could be the type of guy who gets overpaid, maybe even the max, just based on the fact that there's going to be a lot of cap room and not that many guys to give it to. The same type of dynamic that led to Ryan Anderson getting $80 million 4 years ago from the Rockets, of all teams. So you could have had Gordon getting an overpay, and I think that's why the Rockets had to go to the absolute maximum in terms of their annual value and potentially annual years as well if they win the title, which clearly they're capable of. They have a championship roster now, in my opinion. It's up to the players to follow through on the promise and on the investment of Tillman Fertitta to get that done. But as far as Eric, I think it makes sense, because clearly when you look at his track record in Houston, he is about winning. This is not someone that has visions of being the guy that you run your team through. I think to some degree that may be why he had injury issues earlier in his career with the Clippers and the Pelicans. I think he knows this is probably better for his body. He's also getting into his 30s. He's comfortable in that number three, number four role. As long as he's in a spot where he's going to get some shots, he's going to play, and he has a chance to win, then that makes sense for Eric. And really, if he didn't sign this extension, his future was going to be in jeopardy with the franchise. Not because the Rockets would have wanted to move on from him, but I think the risk would have been too great to let Eric become a free agent next summer and potentially have him leave for zero compensation. That tends to happen. So I think Gordon probably knew that if he didn't sign this deal, then later this offseason or at the trade deadline, there was a chance that he might get dealt somewhere, and it might not be a contender, or maybe it's not a destination. We know he loves the Houston community. He's tweeting about the Astros all the time. I think this is where he's comfortable. As he said, it's his home. He said he wants to retire here. The Rockets are giving him the maximum that they can with an extension. And even though theoretically they could give more in free agency next summer, I don't know if the Rockets would be willing to wait that long given the risk of him walking for nothing, which would be pretty devastating. So that's why if Eric wanted to stay in Houston long term, this was the best opportunity to do so. He got every bit of value that he could. And realistically, it's a pretty good value for him, because you think back to 4 years ago, the 2016 free agency, when he signed that four-year $54 million deal with the Rockets, and you could argue how it's turned out that he's one of the more underrated signings in recent Rockets history. He's been a big part of three winning teams that have all gotten at least to the second round of the playoffs, including, of course, the 2017-2018 team, won franchise best 65 games and came one game, basically a hamstring away from the title. Eric's been so important to this team. But when you go back to the summer of 2016, he was 4 years younger. He's 3 years younger now. He was 27. He'll be 4 years younger than what he will be next summer and when he would have been a free agent. He would have been 31 years old. At 27, even in a year 2016, where so many guys were getting overpaid, I mentioned Ryan Anderson, $80 million. That was the year of the unprecedented cap spike. There was so much money going around. That's why the Warriors were able to add Kevin Durant to a 73-win team. Everybody was spending money like drunken sailors, basically. The spending was out of control. Yet the Rockets got Gordon for only 4 years, $54 million, in large part because of, even though he's relatively young, his injuries, his inconsistency. So for Gordon, 3 or 4 years later, to get a better deal, 4 years, $76 million potentially, certainly from an annual value standpoint, about $19 million a season, for Gordon to get a better annual deal 3 or 4 years later when he's 30/31 as compared to 27, that's rare. That doesn't happen a lot. So that's why I think Gordon, when you consider his career trajectory, the deal he took 4 years ago, now I know no one's going to consider him poor with the salaries he's been making, but proportionally, comparatively, relative to NBA players, the fact that he in his 30s is going to be making more than he did in his late 20s, that's a pretty damn good deal. So that's why even though Gordon might could have squeezed a few extra billion dollars if he took it to free agency, number one, I don't know if the Rockets would have stuck around given the downside risk. And number two, for Eric, I think he's at a point in his career relative to his prior contracts, this is enough for him. He wants to be satisfied. He wants to be healthy. At this point, be happy for Eric. He wants to be here. He praised Houston's ownership, more on that momentarily. Eric saying ownership wants to win, and his first comments about the deal, which he was celebrating, he spoke with Mark Berman of Fox 26 here in Houston. But all of those reasons are why, in my opinion, this makes sense for both sides. And above all else, as I mentioned earlier, I think it's something that James Harden clearly signed off on. This is a guy, when you look at James Harden, your franchise centerpiece, your MVP, over his now 10-plus year NBA career, he has had only two teammates that have been longer than four seasons as rotation players with him. Those players are Clint Capela, who's entering his sixth season with the Rockets and really his fifth in the rotation, and then Pat Beverly, who spent about four and a half, close to 5 years with the Rockets beginning in the 2012-2013 season. Other than that, because in Harden's career, he spent 3 years with the Thunder, and then, of course, he was shipped to the Rockets because they couldn't come to terms, Harden and the Thunder, on the contract. And then even here in Houston, Harden has had Dwight Howard. He lasted just 3 years. Harden's had Chris Paul, lasted just two. And in large part, because of the super team era of the NBA, the Heat and the Spurs, more recently the Warriors, you've had this constant churn in the supporting cast around James Harden. As great as he is, you still need to have the best supporting cast possible. And that's why even with really good players, you see a lot of roster turnover that Daryl Morey has done in Houston. It's not because he wants to. It's out of necessity. You have to keep building, keep churning around Harden. And by and large, the Rockets have improved their surrounding talent. But the drawback, there hasn't been that much in terms of year-to-year chemistry, continuity. Eric Gordon going into his fourth year alongside Harden, and as mentioned earlier, he's basically guaranteed to finish that season because he can't be traded for 6 months. That goes beyond the trade deadline. That gives a level of continuity for Eric Gordon here in Houston alongside James Harden that really the only two players from a rotation standpoint in Harden's entire career that he's had longer than that would be Pat Beverly and Clint Capela. Harden has had a lot of roster turnover, the supporting cast in Houston from year to year, certainly in Oklahoma City. He was only there 3 years. So Gordon entering his fourth year and now, barring injury, he'll certainly complete it alongside James Harden. There's not that many guys that Harden identifies with as the type of player that he'll go to war with, that he knows he can trust. And in large part, it's because of how much turnover there's been. Gordon is one of those guys. I feel pretty confident their relationship is great. That's when we saw Harden and EG in the Bahamas earlier in August. This is the type of veteran that Harden has not had alongside him. Well, he's had veterans, not necessarily veterans that he knows inside out, that he trusts, that he's been to war with, so to speak, and knows what they're going to do, where they're going to be on the court, what their instincts are. Above all else, that has value, and the Rockets are at a point, we'll get into this more in a little bit when we look at the Daryl Morey perspective on this, but with the Warriors, not the Warriors anymore, there doesn't appear to be a super team, I think this is where the Rockets, it makes sense to bet a little bit more on continuity and chemistry. They don't have to make a radical change, especially after the Russell Westbrook deal, to transform the roster to have a chance. They have a chance, and Eric Gordon's been a big part of it the last 3 years, and so I think for both sides, the Rockets, for Eric, this deal makes a lot of sense. Kudos to both sides for, I'm sure, making some concessions. I'm sure the Rockets would prefer not to have to spend the max on a guy, well, the max available to them, on a guy that's going to be somewhere between their third and fifth best player. I'm sure Eric and his agent probably think he could get the max or more than that on the open market as a free agent next summer. But really, the Rockets need Eric. Eric needs the rackets, and he seems to enjoy it here for a lot of reasons. His relationships in the locker room, his chemistry with his players, his love for the community, the fact that he's always on a contender. He said that, really, with Daryl Morey, the Rockets always have a chance to win. He likes being here. That's not always true. We know that he wasn't always fond of his experiences in New Orleans. So even though I'm sure both sides think that they could have gotten a slightly better deal if they wrangled every piece of leverage that they had, at the end of the day, both sides made concessions, and Eric Gordon is sticking around Houston under contract for 4 more years, at least counting this one, and hopefully 5 more years, because, well, if he's under contract for 5 more years, it means the Rockets accomplish what we all want them to. They won an NBA title, and that's how Gordon gets the 4th year of his extension activated. All right, jumping back into the program, apologies for going a little bit long in that first segment, but I think this is a really fascinating storyline, this Eric Gordon extension, to look at from a number of angles, because really it was the pivotal question for the Rockets the remainder of this offseason, and really the near to intermediate term as far as what's on the horizon for this franchise and their key decisions from a roster building perspective. This is Locked On Rockets, of course. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, and here in these last couple of segments, we're going to spin it away from Eric and the players, that impact, and talk a little bit more about the management. First, owner Tillman Fertitta, who's putting in the money, and then GM Daryl Morey, who decided that this was in the best interest of really his and the Rockets when it comes to building that roster for the years ahead. In this second segment, I'm going to focus on Tillman Fertitta because I think this is an investment that should not be overlooked. Tillman has not even owned the Rockets for 2 years yet, so his sample is really small from the perspective of an NBA owner. Many of these guys own teams for 20, 30, 40 years, but in this case, every decision is put under a microscope and we make it into such a big deal because we really don't have that much data and we're trying to figure out how committed is he to winning financially, what is he willing to do? And there have certainly been evidence of finances playing a role negatively in some of his decisions. Let's not sugarcoat that. I don't think this is, say, a top five GM or top five owner, excuse me, in the league in terms of his willingness to spend. He does have some limitations, and we have to acknowledge that. You know, we've seen, for example, the Russell Westbrook trade did not get expanded to get a salary filler like Patrick Patterson. The Iman Shumpert negotiations appear to be going nowhere. The Rockets could re-sign him, and he's been in free agency for over 2 months. I'm sure the Rockets, if they were offering, even though they have bird rights, they were offering, you know, $8, $10 million to potentially use him as salary filler down the road, which would give Daryl Morey more options. I'd bet anything that Iman Shumpert would have taken it. The fact that he's still on the market and unemployed over 2 months into free agency, that should tell you that there haven't really been those discussions, at least not at a high level. Now, they could keep him, but if they do keep Shumpert, I guess it's something that's closer to the minimum that materializes as they get near trading camp. Clearly, they're not looking at Shumpert at salary filler. This has gone too long at this point. So let's not make it sound like that Fertitta, just because he gave Gordon this deal, is all of a sudden one of the most aggressive and willing to spend owners in the NBA. No, there are reasons to have some caution. With that said, what I do think this tells you about Tillman Fertitta is that the floor is a lot higher than folks give it credit for, or at least some of them, I should say. There's a legion of Fertitta critics out there. If you're on Rockets Twitter, I'm sure you're aware of them. And I'm not saying there's no merit, but many of these are overdone. By the way, one of the criticisms I want to push back on very quickly before we get into Gordon specifically, there's a lot about Fertitta not really spending the mid-level exception the last couple of summers. Well, as it pertains to this year, that's just flat out inaccurate. Most of us thought going into free agency that the Rockets were going to spend the taxpayer mid-level exception, which would be about $5.5 million annually. Well, they did spend it, about $3.5 million a year on Daniel House, who very well could be the starting small forward for the Rockets, a promising player in his mid-20s, young, athletic. If he were from another team, you guys would be really excited about him. It's just because he was with the Rockets this past year, it doesn't feel like an addition. But the reality is that because he was only with the Rockets 1 year, they didn't have any bird rights, so they had to use that mid-level exception to give him 3 years, to give him the type of deal to stay. And that required the mid-level exception. So no, it's not accurate to say that the Rockets have not used the mid-level exception. No, they used it to bring in Daniel House, or to retain Daniel House, a guy who could very well be a starter playing 25 to 30 minutes a game next year. A promising young player, can make threes, he's a good defender. So they did use the mid-level exception. To say they sat on it for 2 years, as I've seen some say, is just flat out inaccurate. Now, you could argue that, well, if they're not going to go that much above the luxury tax line, why didn't they go the non-taxpayer route? And in that case, they'd still have $5.5 billion left, a little bit above half of the mid-level exception. Why wouldn't they have used that on a role player? Well, number one, the rotation is pretty close to full as it is. But number two, they still could. I mean, if Andre Iguodala extracts himself from Memphis, players in the buyout market, if the Rockets think that they're not going to need to go well above the salary cap, then the non-taxpayer MLE, even though it would hard cap them at the apron level, then sure, you can say, why didn't the Rockets spend all of the MLE? But let's not say that they didn't spend the MLE. No, they did. They used it to retain Daniel House, who's going to be a significant player. So to say they did not use the MLE is inaccurate. Now, they could potentially use more of it, but that's still a bit of a hypothetical. And really, the guy that's been rumored as a target for the Rockets since July 1st, Andre Iguodala, once he was traded from Golden State to Memphis, he could be out there. And it sounds like maybe before the season, there's been a few more rumblings about Iguodala and Memphis perhaps wanting to get something done before the season starts, maybe even before training camp. That could be one of those storylines in September to watch, similar to when Carmelo Anthony got out of New York a couple of years ago because the Knicks didn't want to go through the awkwardness of having him face the media and take reps in training camp in an obvious rebuilding situation where they want to play younger players. So in terms of the 2019 MLE, number one, they spent some of it on Daniel House. And number two, as far as the rest of it, even if they do go the non-taxpayer MLE route, which is not confirmed, and a lot of us going into free agency did not expect them to go that route, even if they do have some of the MLE left, well, there's still an opportunity for them to spend it. So that chapter is not closed. We still need to see what happens moving forward in terms of the willingness to spend it. In 2018, I think at least part of them not using the MLE a year ago was a miscalculation on the basketball ops side. We have seen it reported that the Rockets offered the mid-level exception to Markieff Morris. Basically, now they did use a small chunk of it to get Isaiah Hartenstein, Gary Clark, some developmental types on 3 years. So it's not completely accurate to say they didn't use it in 2018 either, although the deals to Hartenstein and Clark are a lot less than what they gave to Daniel House this summer. And of course, the expectations, if you get Hartenstein or Clark to be a rotation player, you take that as a bonus. Whereas with House, it's something clearly you're asking him to do. But as far as the majority of that MLE, the taxpayer at about $5.5 million a year or whatever was left of that, probably closer to about $4 million after the Hartenstein and Clark deals, the Rockets clearly believed, and according to reports, they did offer it, at least to Markieff Morris. They thought that the options on the buyout market, names like Markieff Morris, we also heard they're interested in Wes Matthews, they thought that that was better than a lot of the options available for the MLE last summer. So at least part of the decision was not on Tillman Fertitta, it was also on basketball ops, who thought that with the MLE, they'd have a leg up in buyouts. And I think, personally, I've said this before, I think it was a slight miscalculation because the buyouts, since they're double dipping, especially that late in the year, and it's prorated anyway, they're going to go for situations in which they get the clearest pathway to minutes to establish themselves for their next contracts. And so I think, to some degree, that was a miscalculation. And I'm sure some of you are saying, well, how does that mesh with saving your MLE if that's what the Rockets are doing this summer for Andre Iguodala? Well, the difference, if Iguodala can extract himself before the season, you're not dealing with prorated figures. So the advantage financially of having the mid-level exception is a lot greater if you're talking about guys in September and October as opposed to February or March. So the financial advantage goes up a lot more, and that's why they could conceivably still use that MLE this year. But even last year, I don't think it's as simple as saying, well, Fertitta just didn't allow them to do it and ordered them to get underneath the tax. No, I really don't think that it was a plan to get underneath the tax until the very last minute once all other options were exhausted. They tried to trade for Jimmy Butler. They tried to trade, thought they had a deal done for Garrett Temple and Jermichael Green with Memphis. No, the deal to get underneath the tax line for Iman Shumpert, that came at the buzzer. If it was something they were philosophically just 100% going to do, you don't wait until the last 18 hours. No, it was something once the bigger deals didn't materialize and the only thing standing between them and not paying the tax and pushing off the repeater clock, so to speak, was the presence of James Ennis. Why the hell not? If James Ennis and Brandon Knight are the only things standing between you and that tax line, and they gave up a first-round pick, but it was that year's first-round pick, which at that point they knew would be in the 20s, and thus the value of picking the 20s in a weak draft pretty limited. So that's why I think those criticisms of Fertitta have been overdone. Now, with that said, as I mentioned a few moments ago, you also can't ignore the negatives. There are some very real ones. Not expanding the Westbrook trade, not doing something with Shumpert, even though you have his bird rights. I think that shows you that clearly Fertitta is not just going to go crazy in terms of his spending. He's probably not top five in his aggressiveness. But I think we've seen enough. Russell Westbrook adding a guy at his salary, over $40 million a year on average between Westbrook and Harden. That's the most expensive duo in the NBA, under contract for really three, probably four more years, including their player options. The Chris Paul contract, a lot of folks around the league laughed at that. The Westbrook contract is even bigger, and it runs a year or two longer. So the Rockets really double down in terms of the star investments this summer, and then Gordon in particular. Folks, to pay a guy who's going to be somewhere between your third and fifth best player, nearly $20 million a year, even with NBA economics rising, that's not easy to do. Look at Milwaukee and Malcolm Brogdon, who signed a four-year, $85 million deal with the Indiana Pacers. That's really not that dissimilar to four-year, $76 million if Gordon's incentives kick in, or even if it's just 3 years, the annual amount is not that dissimilar. The Bucks were a 60-win team. They've got Giannis and Chris Middleton. And even though I'm sure some will say, well, isn't there a sense of urgency because Harden is 30 years old? Well, Milwaukee's got a sense of urgency because Giannis can become a free agent in a couple of years. Really, I think it's next summer that he has to make his decision about his extension. They've got a sense of urgency as well. They won 60 games last year. They're a contender. And yet they did not keep Malcolm Brogdon, a guy who they had the ability to retain, but ultimately the finances were just too rich for their blood. They're willing to invest in Chris Middleton and Giannis in terms of max deals, but they're not willing to go all the way for guys who are somewhere between, like Malcolm Brogdon, the third and fifth best players on the roster. To see the Rockets commit that much annually and long-term to a guy who might be coming off the bench as somewhere between the third and fifth best player on the team, that is not something that the average NBA owner does. Now, I'm not saying that all of a sudden it proves that Tillman Fertitta is this wondrous top five owner. No, at the moment, there's still a pathway to which the Rockets could even be beneath the luxury tax this year. Although my guess is that by the deadline and this team being worthy of upgrades, my guess is they get into tax territory this year at some point. But Eric Gordon's deal, and it doesn't kick in until a year from now, certainly down the line, it increases their likelihood of being a luxury tax team. Relative to positioning the luxury tax, it's not a dramatic change. They already did have Gordon's deal under contract, although it should be noted that Gordon's deal, it wasn't Tillman Fertitta that gave it out. It was Les Alexander in 2016. And when Les Alexander gave out that deal, there was not a Chris Paul or a Russell Westbrook, a second megastar like James Harden with that massive salary. So I've seen some suggest that, well, the Gordon salary spot, it doesn't really tell us anything because it was already there. Well, no, number one, you're expanding it from about $13.5 million a year to closer to $19 million a year. That's a pretty significant raise. And you also, when you gave out the initial contract, you didn't have that second mega deal alongside James Harden that's locked in. So there's plenty of reasons to believe that the bidding could have gotten too rich for the Rockets' blood. I feared, I said in my recent podcast with Mike Meltzer, that maybe the Rockets might look via trade to get someone at, say, 50% of the cost of Gordon that could give you 75% of the production, trying to get a more great value type of player, so to speak. With Fertitta willing to give up this much long-term and this much in annual value to a sixth man, that is not something that an everyday owner does. Not even contending teams. Again, you can see some parallels with the way the Bucks handled the Malcolm Brogdon negotiations. This is something that, to me, it tells you that while Tillman Fertitta, I'm not going to go crazy and say, wow, this guy is a top five owner. He's tremendous. No, there are reasonable concerns. Clearly, especially in terms of trade filler salaries, there's enough to make you think that the Rockets have barriers that they won't cross. The question is, with such a limited sample, just a couple of years, where exactly are those barriers? That's what we're trying to find out. Well, what I think the Gordon deal tells you is that the dire scenarios, those aren't realistic. I don't know that Tillman Fertitta is a top five owner at this point. I don't think he is, but I sure as hell know he's not a bottom five or even a bottom 10 owner, because those types would not pay Eric Gordon nearly $20 million a year to be somewhere between the third and fifth best player on the team. I don't care. The salary slot was already there. You factor in the raise. You factor in adding Russell Westbrook. The Rockets easily could have let him go, said the bidding was too rich for their blood. They could have traded him at the deadline, spun it as well. Gordon wouldn't come to an extension under our terms, so we're trying to get someone that gives us a similar dynamic. There are many ways the Rockets could have pivoted. The fan base, while some would have been agitated losing Eric Gordon, it certainly would not have been a national firestorm of how could you. There were ways that the Rockets could have extricated themselves from these payments to Eric Gordon. They chose not to do that. They chose to keep him. that's a clear signal that Tillman Fertitta wants to win, that he is in this for the long haul. He wants to be a contender. Now, I'm not saying that that makes him one of the best owners in the league. No, there's more that he could do. But what I do think, and this limited sample, is we're trying to really analyze every decision and what it tells us, not just about this year's team, but really the next 20, 30, 40 years of the Rockets. What is Tillman Fertitta's investment level? This is something that should calm a lot of fears. It's not something that tells you point blank, wow, this guy is willing to do whatever it takes to win. He's going to keep investing. No, that remains to be seen. There's a lot of further things that they could do to bolster their championship odds further. Hopefully in the weeks and months ahead, they do that. But what I think this does do, it should tell you that the dire scenarios, the ones that we've seen of, well, this guy could be a James Dolan type, that this could be an owner that long-term, once they lose James Harden, is going to sink the franchise. No, that's a little silly. I don't know if he's, say, top 20, top 15, top 10. Again, the sample is so small, and perhaps he'll learn from some of his mistakes, or, you know, we'll see what happens once Harden and Westbrook are gone and the Rockets aren't a contender. It's a very small sample, and a lot remains to be seen. But what I do think this should tell you is that some of the doomsday scenarios were way, way overdone. This is a guy who, again, there's enough reasonable to be concerned about to say, okay, Tillman Fertitta probably isn't, at least at this point in time, one of the five wealthiest and just high-spending owners in the league, whatever it takes. I don't know if you can say that, but I also, at this point, it seems pretty clear that you can't just say that, well, this guy could be the reason that the Rockets don't win a title. This is going to be an impediment, a problem. No, this should calm a lot of those doomsday fears. Tillman Fertitta, in my opinion, this should show you that he's not a bad owner. Now, is he a good owner? Is he a great owner? Exactly where is he? And what's his level of commitment? That remains to be seen. Stay tuned. But I think at a root level, what this should do for everyone is confirm that Tillman Fertitta is not an albatross. He's not something that's going to be, at least for this era of the franchise, holding them back. This is something that I don't think most owners do. You have to give him credit. As much as we have criticized him, and I've done it, after the Westbrook trade wasn't expanded, after that went on for 5 days, I expected them to find at least someone. They didn't, so that shows us there are limits. Well, if you're going to criticize him for that, you have to praise him for this, because I was not convinced, even though I knew Eric Gordon's value, I did not know how far they would go to keep him, a guy that's between their third and fifth best player, to go nearly $20 million a year for at least 3 additional years, 4 counting this year's contract, potentially 5 if they win the title. That's a significant investment for a guy who's somewhere between the third and fifth best player on your roster moving forward. Credit to Tillman Fertitta. There's a lot that remains to be seen about the guy, but for this week, let's give him the praise that he deserves. And as Eric Gordon said himself, this is evidence that ownership wants to win in Houston. Okay, final thoughts here on this Tuesday, September 3rd, here at Locked On Rockets. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Apologies for going long. I said this would be a 20 or 30 minute podcast, and we're veering closer to 45 or 50. Well, that's because there are so many layers to unpack with this Eric Gordon extension. Third and final segment, I'll try and make it quick as it pertains to Daryl Morey and the management of the Rockets. What I really think this should tell you, Eric Gordon, not just signing an extension, he's under contract now for at least 4 additional years, maybe 5 counting this season. The really interesting tell with Gordon signing the extension, he cannot be traded for 6 months. That goes beyond the February trade deadline. So that basically locks in that unless he suffers a season-ending injury, he's going to be with the Rockets in this upcoming season. And well, even if he suffers the injury, he will be, but in that case, he just would be playing on the floor. Point is, all reasonable scenarios, Eric Gordon is a Rocket for at least this coming season. And that's interesting because certainly, while Gordon's been a good player, he's been involved in talks to some degree his entire Rockets tenure. He was talked about as a sign-and-trade piece last summer with the LeBron James hypothetical. Certainly this year with Jimmy Butler. And I really think I have to give credit to both Eric Gordon and Daryl Morey for being mature about this. Because there are some guys that will see their names and feel disrespected if they see those names in trade rumors. In this case, no, the Rockets have not been trying to move on from Eric Gordon. In fact, there were reports a couple of years ago that the Knicks would have traded Carmelo Anthony if the Rockets would give up Eric Gordon, and wisely, the Rockets would not. The Rockets know that Eric's good, but guys like LeBron James, clearly, and Jimmy Butler, they're just a little bit better, and that's not an insult to Eric. That's not an indictment. So credit to Eric, even though he knows that he's been at least discussed in some of these scenarios. It's not like the Rockets are saying, we don't value you. No, it's just if you can get a top 10, top 15, or in the case of LeBron, arguably the best in the NBA, then even if Eric Gordon's a very good player, then you can't take it as a sign of disrespect. So I think it shows Eric has a good head on his shoulders. He's reasonable. And I also think, you know, it tells you that Daryl Morey does a good job of managing egos behind the scenes. I think he's open with agents. He's open with the players. Ryan Anderson talked about this a couple of years ago after he was shopped so often in the offseason with Carmelo Anthony. The two teams could never come to a deal. So Anderson had to come back to Houston, and he was an effective player. He was a role player, started more than half the year for that 65-win team that won the most games in Rockets franchise history. He still had a positive role, even though he was clearly shopped all summer long. So I think Daryl Morey does a good job of really staying level. He's honest with the players, the agents. He does a good job of managing egos. And I think that's such a critical skill in an executive, because in today's NBA, rumors fly everywhere. That's underrated. And I think that's also why we've talked about the last couple of episodes, the potential of a PJ Tucker extension. That's something that he asked for in a recent interview. Well, number one, I don't know that he's going to get the same type of deal as Eric Gordon, because I don't think the Rockets feel the same sense of pressure with PJ. He's got 2 years left on his existing deal. Now, the last is partially guaranteed. Maybe the Rockets can fully guarantee that, or maybe add on 1 year to it. But PJ Tucker at 34 years old, look, I don't think he is as valuable to other teams around the league as Eric Gordon would be at 30. Also, Gordon entering the last year of his contract, he has a lot more leverage than PJ Tucker, who's under contract for two more seasons. So if the terms are friendly enough, I could see the Rockets getting a deal done with Tucker. And perhaps even if they can't get a longer term deal done, maybe they'll just fully guarantee the last year of his deal. Certainly he's proved worthy of that. But I don't think that the Rockets, just because they extended Gordon, and now you've got Gordon, Capella, Harden, Westbrook, all under contract for, I think, at least three, probably four more years, counting this coming season. I don't think you're going to necessarily see them do the same thing with Tucker, who just doesn't have the same market leverage, and he's also a lot older. However, just because Tucker asked for an extension, it's natural for him to do that. He knows he's running low in terms of prime years left, and the last year of his contract, which is the 2020-2021 season, is not fully guaranteed. Of course he's going to ask. And I'm sure some of you are thinking, well, will PJ Tucker be unhappy if the Rockets don't acquiesce and give him that deal? Well, no, I think what this Eric Gordon negotiation, what this should show you, and again, the same with Ryan Anderson a couple of years ago, Daryl Morey is pretty savvy when it comes to making sure that even if dollars and cents, the finances don't line up for a deal, he knows how to keep these players focused on the straight and narrow. They don't build up feelings of resentment towards the franchise. Daryl Morey, beyond just being smart from a basketball perspective and knowing what players are the best to maximize your championship odds, he's a pretty savvy guy as well. He's better at managing people than he gets credit for. So I think in terms of what this deal tells us about Daryl Morey, that's one thing. Because Eric Gordon's name has definitely been out there. Well, even though he's been in clearly some of these rumors, these trade discussions for the likes of Jimmy Butler, and he was a year ago as well, Daryl found a way to make sure that it didn't really negatively impact or sour his view, his relationship with the franchise. And I think the same would be true with PJ Tucker as well. So that's why, you know, I wouldn't rule it out, but I don't think the Rockets feel pressured to give PJ a deal. He's got a couple of years left, and I really don't think it's a situation where if PJ doesn't get the deal, he's going to become a chemistry risk and he's not going to be happy in Houston or anything like that. I think this deal should show you to trust in Daryl Morey, not just in terms of how he understands basketball, but also how he manages people and egos. That's something where I think a lot of the national perception of him could not be further from the truth if you actually look at players, the majority of them that have been in Houston, and what their relationship with Daryl Morey is actually like. Now, beyond just the managing egos component, what I think this Gordon deal does, and his inability to be traded for 6 months, which takes through the trade deadline, basically locks in that Gordon is going to be a Rocket for this coming season, it tells you that the odds of a trade for the Rockets this year, a major one, are significantly lower. Most of those deals that we've been discussing happened with Eric Gordon, not just because he was a good basketball player, but from a salary perspective, him making close to $15 million a year, and he will this year, $14 million the last year of his prior contract, the Rockets needed that to make the math work, to bring in someone like Jimmy Butler. Well, now, if Gordon is ineligible to be dealt, and Iman Shumpert isn't signed as a trade filler, the Rockets don't really have any mid-tier salaries. So I don't think you're going to see that many big proposals. Now, the Rockets can do a lot of smaller things And they do potentially have about $5.5 million of their non-taxpayer MLE. We talked about that. If they choose to go that route, they can use it on Andre Iguodala or other buyouts. But in terms of a major trade, the odds went down. And if there is a major trade, you can't rule it out. But I think it would almost certainly at this point have to involve Clint Capela, and not just Clint Capela, but an upgrade to that spot at the center position. I don't know. Maybe, you never know, if Kevin Love becomes available. And at that point, I don't know if the Rockets would deal Capela and P.J. Tucker. That seems pretty far-fetched in my opinion. But I don't even think P.J. Tucker is someone that would have a ton of value around the NBA. He's a good player, but at 34 years old, he has a lot more value to the Rockets on a contender than he does to most other teams. If P.J. were traded, and I think that's highly, highly unlikely. Mike D'Antoni called him last year one of the best players in the game, referring to the impact that he provides on defense, in the locker room, his leadership. But Tucker, if he were traded, it would just be to match salaries, in my opinion. You're not going to see someone say, wow, P.J. Tucker at 34, about to turn 35 years old, is the guy that we want to bring in as a cornerstone. No, at this point, if the Rockets make a major deal, and I think it's unlikely, it pretty clearly not only would be involving Clint Capela, making about $17 million a year under contract, pretty friendly terms for four more years, but it would also have to involve a replacement for Capela, because you don't really have a guy. Tyson Chandler is your backup entering his 19th NBA season. He's going to be on the Nene plan. And then after that, I guess you've got Anthony Bennett, Isaiah Hartenstein. Pretty sure you're not going to be trusting those guys, one of them, to suddenly become a 25 to 30 minutes per game player. So at this point, with Gordon untradeable for this season, the only, even if the Rockets do want to get in the game, and Daryl Morey is always big game hunting, let's say a star unexpectedly becomes available by the February trade deadline, the only way the Rockets can make the math work, it would almost certainly have to involve Clint Capela, who makes about $17 million a year. And also, because of Capella's importance at the center position, it would almost certainly have to involve the Rockets getting a five back in the deal. I think that's pretty unlikely to line up. And personally, I think Clint in his mid-20s, the Rockets don't have a lot of younger players in general that are proven. I think the far and away likely scenario is that the Rockets just bank on Clint continuing to improve. He works hard developing him, and the Rockets don't make a major trade this year. Gordon's off limits, so they won't have him to match salaries. And Capela, while he is tradable and he's got a good contract, again, it's pretty difficult to see it happening, because the Rockets not only would have to find a taker for Capela, a deal that makes sense for them, but it'd have to be someone at the same position as well, because they don't really have an internal replacement for those minutes at the five if they go that route. So overall, I think making Gordon trade ineligible this year, it lowers the chances that the Rockets make a blockbuster trade. Now, sure, they can make smaller additions. They got the mid-level exception. They can get more reasonably priced guys. They have a number of trade exceptions. They've got smaller salaries, especially guys they've signed this offseason that as of December 15th, they'll be able to trade. So I'm sure Daryl Morey will do something. But in terms of a bigger deal, I think signing Eric Gordon and giving him basically 6 months of not being trade eligible that goes through the deadline, it lowers the odds of a deal this year. That's pretty clear. And with Daryl Morey, a guy who's always preaching flexibility, that might sound a little jarring. Why are the Rockets limiting their odds for this season? And the reason I think they're doing that, the key takeaway above all else, as it pertains to Daryl Morey, I think this is the first time in Daryl Morey's entire existence in Houston, certainly with James Harden, that they truly believe that their roster is good enough. Now, I don't think that the Rockets are not looking for upgrades. Certainly they are. I'm not saying that they're an overwhelming favorite, but this is the first year, even relative to the last 2 years, as good as they've been, even that 65-win team, I think they looked at the Golden State Warriors and said, you know what, we probably need some breaks to go our way. That's why we talked about increasing the variance. We heard that a lot. To beat them 4 times out of 7 is so difficult. Now, with the Warriors not being the Warriors anymore, the addition of Russell Westbrook, this is the first year that I think the Rockets truly believe that it is theirs for the taking. It is wide open. Now, sure, they need some breaks, but they don't head into any series where they look at it and say, from an X's and O's perspective, we are clearly deficient. Even 2 years ago, the 65-win team, going into that series with the Warriors, I think behind closed doors, Daryl Morey would tell you that their roster, referring to Golden State, was better. I don't know that he would say that about any team this year. Now, that doesn't mean it's a guarantee the Rockets win the title. No, there's lots of teams in the same class, so they've got to go out and execute. But I think because the Rockets don't see themselves as clearly deficient as they've been in the past relative to at least one other team, that's why the Rockets have preached flexibility so much, because you always have to be willing to think big and be opportunistic should something come available when you're trying to catch the gorilla that was the Golden State Warriors. Well, now there's not a team like this That's why I think the Rockets are more comfortable, and Daryl Morey specifically, in limiting some of their options, at least for this year. Now, next summer, could Eric Gordon be dealt? Sure. And his contract being fairly friendly, a lot of team control for a number of years, sure. A year or two from now, could he be offered in trades again? Absolutely. But for now, the reason why I think the Rockets are willing to limit their odds this season at a deal, this is the first time in the James Harden era in Houston and probably the Daryl Morey era as well, that I think they head into a season feeling like they are truly good enough. That this roster, not that they couldn't have beaten the Warriors the last couple of years, but they were clearly not as good. They needed something to go their way. I think they truly believe this year with this core that they are good enough. And I think that's why you're willing to see them go the extra mile to bet on continuity, to bet on chemistry, bringing back guys like Eric Gordon and not making them available in trades. I think that's where it's not just what the Rockets do themselves, it's also your competition. And that's where the changing landscape of the NBA, I think that was the final thing that really pointed to a deal between the Rockets and Eric Gordon getting done, because the drawback, well, certainly for 6 months, that takes you through the trade deadline, he can't be dealt. I'm sure that's something that Eric and his agent probably wanted as well. Well, now that you head into a year where you finally feel like you're good enough, I think that makes sense for the Rockets. And ultimately, I think that is why Daryl Morey felt comfortable giving up this deal or agreeing to this deal. And that's why he's taking Eric Gordon off the block effectively through this coming season. And now you can count on Eric Gordon, 30-year-old guard, 16 points a game over his 3 years in Houston, sixth man of the year a couple of years ago, 36% shooting or better from three-point range. I think that's why the Rockets and EG are going to be comfortable with one another at least for one more year. And based on the contract, if the Rockets don't trade him at least for four more seasons, possibly five, if they do what we all want and hope and believe they can do, and that's win an NBA championship and thus kick in the final year, the incentive, that is, of Eric Gordon's newly extended contract. Anyway, with that, that's where I will break things on this Tuesday, September 3rd. Apologies for going long, but wow, this Eric Gordon extension, so many interesting angles, and so that's why I went about double what I was expecting to do as I let off the podcast, but hopefully you found this worthwhile. Anyway, until next time, this is where I break. If you want more coverage before our next podcast, whenever that is, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. And beyond that, we've got a Facebook account, facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, a website, LockedOnRockets.com, email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of those ways that not only can you consume content, get news, but you can even ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan, or even you, the human being. Please don't hesitate to reach out and let me know. Beyond that, if you would be kind enough to subscribe, leave 5-star reviews, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Himalaya. Odds are, because we're part of a great network of shows at the Locked On Podcast Network, you can listen to us at your listening provider of choice. If you'd be kind enough to subscribe, that's how you get episodes right before I even post them to the aforementioned Twitter account. They'll be delivered straight to your inbox. And if you'd leave a 5-star review, that's how we can look attractive to potential advertisers and keep the business model rolling as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. So for today, this is it. As always, thanks so much for listening. And please come back soon for more episodes right here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.